Hello and welcome to the award-winning Ardent Atheist, official podcast of the United Church of Bacon, where reason reigns supreme, not frogs and fish. Today's episode brought to you by billions of years of evolution. Sitting next to me is my co-host and producer, Heather Henderson.
Hi, everybody.
You know Heather from the Facebooks, on the InnerTubes, and from our other hit podcast, Skeptically Yours. You can find links to our guests' websites, join our Twitter and Facebook feeds, subscribe to our premium ad-free 90-minute full-length episodes, and our email at ardentatheist.com.
If you'd like to take part in the live chat moderated by the author of the fabulous blog, Comedy Obscura, Joe Swam, go to ardentatheist.com/live and chat us up right now.
And please go to iTunes, subscribe to our podcast for free, write a review, help us get in the top 10 up there where you've never put us. You may also go to ardentatheist.com/premium and subscribe to our premium ad-free content for a measly $10 per year.
Subscribe now or Satan will beat zombie Jesus.
What the heck are you talking about?
Well, the listeners need to subscribe or Satan will win.
You're running out of threats, aren't you?
No.
Yeah, yes you are.
Okay, yes.
What's wrong? Feeling under the weather?
It's just Satan winning.
Just give it up.
Fine. Hail Satan! We only have two rules on the show. Rule number one, guests may plug anything they want. We're not hypocrites. Go subscribe.
And rule number two, if you're a listener who's ever been offended by anything, get a sledgehammer and destroy your computer now. This show has no restrictions on language or content, and certainly has nothing for you, you cunty McCrude. We're coming to you live from ENH Studios in sunny Studio City, California, at nighttime. In the Studio City tonight, we have Peter Boghossian and Felicia Michaels. You know these two from Showbiz.
And the World of Reason. That's a different show.
Yeah, you're doing the other show.
Sorry.
We fixed that problem.
I said I was under the weather.
You are under the weather. Heather doesn't feel good.
I don't feel good today.
Thank you so much for being here, both of you. Peter, thank you for being here. Felicia, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for asking.
Absolutely.
Pleasure. Doesn't she have a great voice?
Yeah, I love her voice. Her voice is insanely great. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
First time I saw her on stage. Amazing.
Wow. Is that an affectation or is that your real voice?
No.
No, it's kind of the real thing. My grandmother had a very light voice, too. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Somebody once said to me, I dated a girl who had the squeaky voice, like really, really crazy high.
Oh,
like,
well, mine used to be really crazy high.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I smoked a lot of pot and it's reasonable now.
There you go. So there is a treatment.
There you go.
It's very feminine.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's a very feminine voice. Yeah.
It's very feminine until you're screaming at children.
Yeah.
And then it's very unfeminine.
That's something I'd like to see.
No, you wouldn't.
God damn it, get over here!
There's a girl at our Starbucks that we go to who's a barista. I was about to be like barista. I don't know what I was going to say.
Barista?
She was a barista, but she had her voice is extremely high pitched, almost to the point where it sounds like she had.
It sounds
helium.
Fake.
It does sound fake.
Right.
And
right.
it sounds like she sucked in some helium purse. But it's her voice.
Can I take your order, please?
And it's not just the register she's in.
It's the tonality and everything.
There's baby talk mixed into it.
Right,
But I can tell it's her real voice because she speaks with her diaphragm when she yells out the orders. But it's just really high-pitched and really squeaky.
But even if it's not a real voice, like, all right, you know, whatever.
Yeah. She's very cute and very nice.
Well, I mean, it's not going to gain her anything in her entire life, so I don't think she's recognizing that she's doing that on purpose, you know?
Right.
I mean, when I was younger, my voice was very much like that, but it was always amplified because I was on a microphone doing comedy, so then it was worse, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know. Do people do things to change their voice? Can you...
Well, I dated a girl for half a year, and... And she would amplify it with language options. You know what I mean?
Like meaning what?
You're my little Emmy.
I mean that she actually would say that to me, and I've been in
your little what?
Emmy.
Yeah, which is great.
Great. I don't know that whole baby talk thing. That's a little creepy to me.
It's weird. Now a friend of mine swears that, and I think this is bullshit for the record, bullshit flag right now.
Yeah.
Swears that people who have the baby talk thing and the high voice. Are sexual victims, and they got locked into that.
There's no way.
It's crazy bullshit, right?
I mean, because that having a high voice is an accident of birth. So there's no way. I mean, it may, in a weird way, maybe there's some evidence that predisposes one to be
Felicia.
What
would you like to squeak about that?
I feel like it's a compromise between the two.
Yeah.
Because I do feel like my grandmother had a very light voice, so I feel like it is kind of genetic.
But
then I do feel like, because when I was 18, I was a stripper, And I was the baby stripper at the club. Mm-hmm. And I did comedy right around that time. And that might be true. That might be true. Or the fact that it was very light, and since I was on a microphone, that it did come across as magnified,
right,
that it kind of did lock me into that. But that wasn't causal.
I mean, but you started that. And you weren't, I mean, I don't want to be overly personal, but his claim is that you were, when one is molested, then one develops these qualities.
I'm not just saying molested, but I'm saying if you're very sexualized younger, I could maybe sort of see that. I could maybe sort of see. I'm not saying it's. I agree 100%, but I could be open to that possibility, maybe for sure.
Well, I think there's probably an answer to that suggestion. The person who said it to me was someone who studied psychology.
Well, then he's absolutely wrong.
And she. even she said, I don't know if this is confirmed by data or not. It's something I've heard. So there's an answer out there, but I do a podcast. I don't write books. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I just like to talk about whether it is or not.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's definitely interesting. And I think because going from stripping into comedy and then doing comedy and kind of being trapped into that as the baby comic for a long time.
Right.
That I could see maybe in a time when I should have grown out of that a little bit more, maybe I didn't, you know? I'm not saying it's 100%, but I could be very open to that.
Those are similar, similar because in all cases you're the center of attention, you're the focus.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Huh.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Why do you have such a low voice, you fuck?
I hear that men who have low voices
have low-hanging balls. I've heard that, too.
I hear that.
That's so funny. Their voices got stuck that way when they molested a little girl.
That's what I hear.
Is that the joke you were painting? Because that's hilarious.
That's why my voice is so high.
Yeah.
Very funny. You put an app out. This is an atheist show. Mm-hmm. We know how you believe, but we're going to ask you again for this show.
Okay.
You've been here before. But Peter has put out an app.
Don't you have two apps now?
One is more than enough. It's been an epic.
What's that other thing I saw on your website? Is it a card game or a
flash? Oh yeah, I have a card game too. I've been busy.
You know, card games, honey. They don't go on phones.
Yeah, I consulted on that card game.
They can.
But it's an actual deck of cards on like an app.
Yeah.
Jux, a storytelling game for creative thinkers.
Yep.
J-U-X.
You're just about helping people figure out what the answers are properly.
For themselves.
I really love that about you.
For themselves.
You. Yeah.
Yeah, and breaking through, again, this is an atheist podcast, breaking through delusion, trying to be more honest with themselves, smashing dogmatism.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. You wrote a book.
I did. I'm about to write another one, but yeah, I wrote a book.
How to Make Religious People Unstupid, I think was the title.
No, I'm
forgetting. I'm sorry.
The sound guy, love that one. Now, it's a manual for creating atheists.
Yeah.
And the app is called Atheos, Atheos-app.com.
You can go check it out there.
I just put your website on the chat, even though no one can see us.
And where can people go hear this book? Is it a? Did you make it?
Still on Amazon? Oh, my new one or this?
Well, no. This the atheist book. Did you how to make an atheist? Did you do? Is there an audio version of that book?
Yeah, it's audio. I did the recording myself. It took.
It's horrible work.
Well, you know, it's interesting. And so I'm so used to I lecture just before so many people every year. I don't use notes or anything. And on the rarest of occasions when I look at the bottom, like if the first time, I just basically use that. I glance at that, and then it's all extemporaneous. So that is not what you do when you read a book. It's a little warm in here.
Yeah, it is.
When you read a book, you have to, an audio book, you have to do it word for word. Like,
yeah.
You can't, there is no, like, improvising.
Right.
It's just boom.
Right.
So for me, I think the book took so long precisely because I was constantly improvising.
Right.
Improvising my own stuff.
Yeah. Huh.
We have a skeptic group called Investigation Network, and we were talking about having you come and talk about your epistemology stuff, guiding it towards skepticism.
Yeah, I'll be in L.A. again in January, and then again, I think, in February. I love coming down here.
Yeah, we love having you.
If you're coming down in February again, we'll talk about asking you to speak.
Cool.
We have a place down at Santa Monica College.
Doing a skeptic camp.
Yeah. Well, that's not till later this summer. Oh, but we could do an individual thing for you.
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, well, no, I, you know. But let me know. We'll be in touch.
I'd love that.
Oh, thank you. That's kind of you.
Yeah, it's kind.
So you've got you've got the book, which is great. And a friend of mine brought your book up recently and said, what do you think of this Peter Boghossian guy?
Jerk.
Teaching people how to argue with religious people.
No, I don't teach anybody how to argue. I teach people how to have civil conversations with people.
Right.
There's a fundamental difference. That's a crucial distinction. It's not about an argument.
Yeah. And I don't think he said literally that, by the way. And I don't remember specifically who it is, or I would name this person. I know he's in the atheist community, but I remember it was the first time someone asked me about it, and I stopped and really gave it a serious bit of thought. And I said, all right, here's exactly what I think. And I don't know that I've ever even told you this.
Tell us. We're all ears.
It seems to me that the effectiveness of teaching people how to discuss religious beliefs, how to get people who are non-believers to engage people who are believers, that one-on-one thing, I don't know that that's a big, big number of people converted, air quotes, right? That's what I think. I don't think that's really, I don't think that's the best thing about what you've done here. I think the best thing about what you've done is you're causing people to get out there in the public and actually represent as atheists. And you're also
not even necessarily as atheists, but as people who are open-minded, or attempt to also learn from those conversations, be civil, help people break through dogmatism and delusion. But I interrupted you.
Well, and they're making videos of these exchanges. That's part of the package, of what you suggest people
that's
do.
And Anthony Magnabosco does that. He gives a pretest, the intervention, and a post-test.
Yeah.
Initially, when I came out with the book, even the idea for the book, I wanted 10,000 people to do that.
Yeah.
And I didn't get my 10,000 yet, but it's slowly spreading. We have hundreds of people online. They go, they perform interventions.
And you know, there's that Facebook group that's based off of your teachings.
Yeah, and I the Facebook groups and all these sites have spontaneously and holistically popped up. And I absolutely, positively do not get involved in any of that because it shouldn't be about me. It shouldn't be about one. It's not about Dawkins or Harris or me. This should be about the ideas that stand. And I don't want to make this a cult. I don't want to make this, Boghossian said. Well, what does that mean? You know, it's like people need to take this wherever it goes leaderlessly.
Right.
It shouldn't be a cult of personality.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And sometimes people abandon a religion or escape a religion only to find new replacements.
Dogmas. You
know? Yeah.
Question is, if you're a new atheist and you want to get involved with this kind of thing, what would you say to that person who's like, I know what I believe and I know that I don't believe this, but I want to talk about it. What would you say to that person who's never done it before and wants to start?
Well, I'd suggest you read the book, A Manual for Creating Atheists, and I'd suggest that you watch some of the videos of people online, and hopefully when the app comes out pretty soon, we're going to do a soft launch, so we're not going to announce it, so just feedback will trickle in.
Would it be like questions and answers?
Yeah, so there are tens of thousands of fields for – I mean, I'll show it to you later. It's just thousands and thousands of fields in which every conceivable question that you could think of can be asked. So you can train yourself. If someone says, everything must have a cause, boom, it's in there. That's the darling of the Christians right now. Or arguments for Muslims, Hindus – anything anybody can say, even a section on curveballs, you know, Jesus helped me stop drinking or what have you. Section on Mormons, section on the Falun Gong. So it's basically a way that people can train themselves to have these. It's like practice and training to have these conversations.
I like that a lot because people will come to me and say, I'm in the middle of this debate and I don't know what to say to this question. What do I say? And, you know, they'll come to me privately and then I'll say what I know and tell them to try this. And sometimes, you know, some people can out-talk another person. They can out-talk them in circles. And it gets really, really frustrating, especially if you don't know what they're talking about. You know, when I start getting into philosophy and things like that and not, you know, they don't just stick to the subject, like it gets frustrating and you don't know where to go and maybe you don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, and in those circumstances, it's almost never, sometimes it is, but it's almost never bad to say I don't know. But the problem is that people engage these conversations and they don't have the tool set And even beyond the tool set, they don't have the right attitude to speak to believers. Like, they think that bully beating them,
yes,
beatdowns. And we know the literature is conclusive that that just does not work in these right. one-on-one micro-interventions.
It's funny right. because when I'm in a conversation with someone, I stay calm, cool, and rational, and the people, they usually end up just going off on me. And even when they curse at me or call me names, I still stay calm. It just makes them angrier and angrier yeah. when you... and then you kind of win the situation over because you're not being an ass.
Why argue someone out of their religion?
People like to debate.
Yeah. Why do that?
So there's the mistake. So she picked up mm-hmm. off on right. your word of argument. Right. It's not about arguing.
Yeah.
And see, the moment you say that there's an argument, it means that you have a position to defend and I uh-huh. have a position to defend.
Right.
And we become vested in those positions. And that's not a productive dialogue. That's not
That's not what street epistemology is,
yeah,
technically
that's
speaking.
There's no longer a truth-seeking element there.
Right, but why I guess...
Why bother talking to people
yeah.
about their religion?
Yeah, why bother?
I'm going to tell you that.
Okay.
After the break. You're listening to Ardent Atheist at ardentatheist.com and available to the iTunes Store. More after this unavoidable interruption. And now back to Ardent Atheist Nonsense You Can Believe In. We're talking with Peter Boghossian and Felicia Michaels. Thank you both for coming out and doing our show today.
Thank you for having me.
I want to answer your question.
Yes.
The reason we do this show, there are many people who are atheists, and they're very active in that atheistic movement because I'm one of them, considers religion to be harmful, and deeply so. significantly so. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons that you'll find people want to go out on the streets and discuss this. There are many other reasons.
I understand discussing it. I understand the purpose of your show. I don't understand why you would want to enter into a heated discussion with
someone. That's a mistake. It's
someone.
Not heated.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, you know, I feel like she's asking why Emmanuel to create an atheist.
Yeah, yeah.
Why would you
try to create an atheist?
Is that what you're saying?
But even before we answer those, we have to talk about what it is. It's not an argument. It's not a heated discussion. It's a conversation.
Right.
But given that, the reason is because people want to know what's true. I want to know what's true. I can tell from 5 minutes of talking to you, you want to know what's true. Like, you want...
Well, I mean, I'm definitely open to it. The more I...
Being
an atheist, the more as I age, I definitely am
religious?
Open to it. Can't say that I am, necessarily.
How would you define yourself from a religious standpoint? None of your business is a fair answer, by the way.
You don't have to. Okay. What do you mean, like, from a religious standpoint?
Well,
I can see for some people the value in it. Not for myself.
Your question is
I'm asking
for
her.
Yeah.
What do you mean, like?
Do you believe there's a God?
I don't believe there's a God in the sense that people who are religious believe that there's a God. No, I don't think there's someone in judgment over me.
You think there's a creator? I'm trying to find a label that fits you right.
That's not an individual, no. No, I don't.
No? Okay.
Yeah.
Do you believe there's a supernatural realm? Do you believe in karma, pixies?
I don't believe in pixies.
I think that's a serious question.
Okay, I know. Yeah. I didn't think the conversation was going to go there. But
I totally don't have to talk about this.
No,
I'm totally
comfortable talking about it.
Legitimately curious about what you believe.
No, I don't believe in pixies. I don't believe... in a spiritual realm, mm-hmm. I do.
So no ghosts? Ghosts aren't a thing?
Oh, well, I have seen a ghost.
Okay, so you believe in ghosts, okay.
All right, but I can't say that I believe in ghosts. I have seen one, but I can't say.
That's a weird sentence to me.
I know, it is weird,
you hear it?
Right? Yeah.
I can't say that I believe M&Ms exist, even though there's some over there behind you.
Yeah, I can't.
I mean, that's how that feels to me.
Yeah, I did see something. I can't.
I did too.
You know, so I can't say that when people talk about, you know, communicating with the dead, I can't say that that happens.
You know, those are just douchebags, right?
Right, probably. But, you know. That being said, I do look up my astrological chart every day.
You do?
I mean, just
it's funny. The astrological thing is where my mom became an atheist in her 60s.
Oh, really?
It took her a long time to get there. Uh-huh. She was in hell. She was sure I was going to hell, and that was making life a hell for her.
Right.
And she couldn't understand how it's even possible to be in heaven knowing that your son went to hell. Right? She doesn't know. That's
right.
Not heaven.
Yeah, that's
so
terrible. It's
she
terrible.
Was having a lot of trouble with that and mm-hmm. and talked to me over many years and finally eventually was like,
"You are going to hell.
Religion is stupid." She was not. She didn't do that. Religion is lying to me. She figured that out.
Right.
And then a year or two after she came to that realization, she and I were driving around in Florida. I've told the story many times on the show. And she insisted that all of her exes were the same sign. And I was like, I had a realization that day that someone who is able to shed off religion hasn't necessarily shed off all of the dumbass ideas.
That might be true. For me, my grandmother was very religious, but my grandmother was also born in a covered wagon and was married at the age of 14 and had 12 children. One died of sleeping sickness on the farm in Oklahoma.
Right.
And for her, religion was a solace. And I understand, and I have an aunt who's so religious she's evil, one of her daughters. So I do understand for some people, it's a comfort who struggle.
Yeah.
And for her, living in a situation when you're 14 years old, married to a guy, and you're having children all over the place, and you live on a farm, and life is fucking hard, I understand the idea of trying to grasp on to the fairy tale of religion.
I understand that as well, but I'm hoping that our future children and future people will be able to shed a lot of that off. I mean, there's no changing people who truly want to believe in that and maybe don't have the education to know, you know, about other ways of thinking, or, you know, but I'm hoping with this kind of education that we can provide for mm-hmm. them, that, you know, more people will start shedding those kind of thoughts where they believe in something without proof, just because right. it makes them feel right. better.
See, right. I would have liked to have talked your grandmother. Is that who you were uh-huh, talking about?
Yeah.
I would like to
have, she had the light voice.
I would like to have been there yeah. and talked to her, as we're talking about now,
uh-huh.
About considering other ways of thinking about the universe, her world, her options,
right.
her choices,
right.
That aren't biblical in nature. Because the biblical ideals that your grandmother was shackled with uh-huh. in her comfort.
Right.
Are pretty awful.
Well, of course they are. And here's the thing, too, is I was just talking to someone about their mother, who is quite elderly, and how their mother is pretty much an atheist but still goes to church. And it's about community for her.
Yes. Yeah.
As because she's older now, she doesn't have a lot of the same friends because they've passed. So for her, it's about community. I'm not saying that's correct, but right. I understand that idea for some people. If you're in, you know, in the middle of fucking nowhere, but Massachusetts.
Like, I visited my family in Memphis, and everyone does everything at the church because there's nowhere else to go.
That's right.
So,
that's
you know,
right.
all week they have different events happening, whether it's a dinner or it's to help the, you know, the homeless, or they're getting together for choir practice. Or they're putting on a play. I mean, it's the community. And I never actually really talked to any of them to see if they really believe how they really feel about religion, because they don't bother me about my atheism, so we just don't really talk about it. But, you know, when I'm out there, I'm like, there's nothing here. There is nothing. This
right.
is what
so
you have.
So it's more understandable. My family lives in Kansas, and it's understandable to me.
Are you from Kansas?
I was born in Kansas, Army brat, but I was weirdly born in Kansas.
I was born in Anaheim, but I grew up in Kansas City.
So right now, so you don't feel attacked or threatened, right?
No, not at all.
Yeah, so we're having a discourse and a dialogue. Right?
But I'm very open to it. But if I was someone who wasn't open to it, I'm sure I would feel threatened. Here's a fucked up thing. I send my kids to religious school.
Really? Why would
yeah.
you do that?
Better education.
Why do you do that?
I chose that school that my kids go to because I, as a parent, had the realization of I want my kids to be able to have an understanding of the Bible for should they grow up and they are having a religious argument with someone or discussion with someone, that they're at least knowledgeable about what they're talking about, number one. So it's not about a comfort thing. But the other thing is for the reason of your kids are their own individual people, and no matter what you harp on them about, there might be a time when I'm not around and as adults that they might have to lean on something in a weak moment, and I'm okay if they do that with the religion in some sense.
Why don't they just lean on the truth, though?
Well, that's a good idea, too. Let's hope they do that first. Let's
but
hope.
Don't you think that sending them to the school will predispose them to leaning on silliness and superstition and potentially dangerous ideas?
I think they don't give a shit. I think I'm doing my job. Don't worry, my friend.
My mother gave me a choice. She said, you can go to Hebrew school, or you can go to Christian school, or you can go to public school.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I thought about it, and I went, I hate church. I can't stand it. I don't want to go to a public school. I mean, I don't want to go to a religious school, but if I were smart...
Hebrew school, right?
I would have gone to, well, at least one of them.
Because it's non-proselytizing.
Well, I didn't know any better, but I don't know. Maybe I would have gone to Hebrew school, but I could have gotten a much better education at the religious schools because they were private, and I lived in a really hard inner city area.
That's a really... sad thing about our society.
Yes.
Right? That
yeah.
we don't
yes,
afford
absolutely
people, public education to the first rate. And not to get you off on the tangent, but I watched the Republican presidential debate last night with Greg, DJ, and Thomas.
Yeah.
These people.
I didn't know they were in the
my
debate.
My goodness. They were pretty impressive. Impressively. Yeah. I mean, these people. And when you talk about education, none of those people are the individuals who are going to...
Yeah, as a Republican, how do you feel about it?
I'll tell you how I'm not a Republican, but uh-huh. I'll tell you this. A lot of people will say that all those candidates are the most stupidest people on the planet, and that's not true.
No.
They're not stupid people. They're probably as smart as any one of us sitting here. However,
I don't think that's true.
Well, I kind of do think that's true.
Go ahead.
However, how? I will say this. None of us here should be president. Like, that's how I feel about it. And when I look at them, it's slightly frightening. Every time Marco Rubio said tool, well, the tool, it just made me laugh, hearing him say tool.
When I watch many of the people in the Republican field talk about
anything,
not anything. I won't go as far as anything. But when I watch them talk about things that they clearly are ignorant about,
like ISIS, now, international relations, foreign policy, actually almost anything you could think of.
Yeah,
maybe gubernatorial issues less so because you have some governors. But I have truly, I'm 49. I have never in my life seen a field of the least impressive people. And I don't think that's necessarily true. That I don't think that intelligence is the be-all and end-all of anything. That's not who I aspire to be. That's not who I aspire for a political leadership. I don't think the most important thing is that they're always the smartest guy in the room. There are other qualities. But I look at these people, and I will say I find the Democrats incredibly I find the whole this whole process, this electoral cycle has been disgusting to me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Hillary Clinton is such a polarizing figure. Can I make some predictions right now?
All right, sure. Let's hear it.
I'm making some predictions and we'll revisit this.
Okay.
The first prediction I'm gonna make is that Hillary Clinton will be the nominee. It's gonna be probably Marco Rubio, maybe Ted Cruz, but I think it's gonna be Marco Rubio. I think we're going to have the largest voter turnout in history, both by percentage of the total electorate and just in sheer terms of raw numbers.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I think that, probably the primary reason, is Hillary Clinton is such a polarizing, contentious figure that people will come out, no matter who the Republicans run, to vote against her.
She's polarizing in what way? Do you think? Are you saying on purpose or incidentally?
She's polarizing because she has a vagina.
I wonder if that's what you're saying.
No, Carly Fiora is not polarizing, although she doesn't have the same.
I don't think she has a vagina.
She doesn't have a vagina.
See, now that was funny. That was excellent. Yep. That's excellent. No, she's polarizing in that for reasons, it makes no difference whether you or I agree with these reasons, but people despise that woman.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they legitimately despise her.
I think they despise her for the same reasons, generally speaking. We're overgeneralizing right now. Yeah. I'm going to say that up front. For the same reasons they despised Obama.
Oh, you think it's an immutable characteristic
gender.
Race, gender?
Yes.
I do think so, too.
Don't you think?
Yeah, I do think so.
I think it's that simple. Yeah. I think she's a strong and a powerful woman, and I don't think we're ready for that. I mean, I am.
See, I don't think...
But
think
I just don't think America's
component
ready. Any America that would put Trump in two digits...
Yeah, I think it's a lot higher than that. I think it's far... There's really some really good
what do you mean?
Pieces that came up on Twitter. So... Part of the way that people gather poll data is they just ask them, what do you think of Trump? And when Trump came out with his anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim comments, many of people simply would not acknowledge that.
Okay.
So it's hard to get reliable poll data because it's so politically incorrect. So I think, and I hope I'm wrong about this.
You think
this,
it's badly wrong? It's hugely mistaken. They're not right.
Yeah, I don't know how I would define hugely, but my guess is at an absolute minimum of 5 and probably 10 points higher.
Higher? For Trump?
Well, when he came out with his anti-Muslim comments, his rankings
went
8%.
Up.
Right.
Yeah.
I think you might not be wrong about the Marco Rubio thing, but the thing is, Marco Rubio has a big problem when it comes to immigration, and if Marco Rubio becomes the candidate for the GOP, I think a lot of people that would have come out of their trailer to go vote for Trump will not vote for Marco Rubio. In fact, I think they will not vote. I don't think necessarily Hillary has it locked in.
I don't think so either.
If it becomes Bernie,
it seems like Bernie could take this
no,
away.
No, no, you're kidding yourself. That's my other point. He is just not electable. The man is not electable.
And tell me why.
I'm happy to tell you why.
Did you watch the Killer Mike thing? Was that guy's name? Killer Mike interviews?
No.
With Bernie Sanders? You should go watch those.
Okay, I'll check them out. Now I want you to tell her why he's unelectable after the break. I did it again. I do it all the time. You're listening to Ardent Atheist at ardentatheist.com and available at the iTunes Store. More after this insufferable disruption. And now back to Ardent Atheist nonsense you can believe in. We're talking with Peter Boghossian and Felicia Timebangers Michaels. Thanks for being here, and that's a great plug for Timebangers. It's a it's a book series that some friends of mine have put together, and it's about these girls who travel through time banging these great people.
I didn't think it was anything less.
It's phenomenal.
I bet it's absolutely awesome, by the way.
It's
fantastic.
Super cool idea.
Yeah, yeah. The minute I heard about it, I was like, I will absolutely put that on our show. And
you could make a really interesting TV series out of that too.
Yeah. So we're dreaming about the burn. What's the story there? Why do you think
he's so unelectable?
Why do I think he's unelectable? Well, so let me be crystal clear about this. I'm not saying that I advocate any of these positions,
but
I just want to be clear that I think that this is how it's processed in the American mind.
Mm-hmm.
People don't see him as charismatic. People see him as too old. People see him. He said the socialist word. If I said nothing else, self-describing as a democratic socialist.
We're not ready for that
socialist
word.
It's not even about
now. You and I grew up with socialist, commie, all rolled into one ball of bullshit, right?
Yeah.
I think we've outgrown that. I think the you and I's of the world even have figured out that was bullshit. Socialist is not a scary word anymore.
Well, but it doesn't make any difference what you and I think.
Okay.
I'm not even saying that's right or wrong.
My point in saying that was that it seems to me there's a large block of voters who were raised with our dads and our grandpas saying commie socialist bastards, and we clumped them together.
Yeah.
And that means the word. So it is an S word, you know?
I mean, the only possible... I mean, I guess the question is, under what conditions could Bernie Sanders win? The only possible thing I can think of, and again, I'm not a pundit. I'm not a professional talker. I'm just... I follow politics.
Well, you are punding right now.
Yeah, but I'm not I'm not a professional pundit.
How
I'm
do
not
you conjugate that verb?
Yeah.
So I think if Trump got it, he's such a despicable, his policies are so despicable, so reprehensible, I think that would cause some people who would normally be on the fence to come out and vote for Bernie.
Oh, I think millions of people who've never voted will vote if Trump is
but
up
that's
there.
Was my
oh,
that's
yeah.
initial
you're right about that.
That was my
will
initial
come out
prediction
to vote
yeah.
against him
yeah.
and for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my initial prediction. This election will be hands down let's revisit this, you and I, over text mm-hmm. or tweet mm-hmm. or this will be the largest voter turnout in American history.
Trump is great.
But if he is not the nominee, then...
If he causes the largest voter turnout in American history,
but if he's
a great human being.
Well, but if he's...
My uncle made me the funny man I am. That's
uh-huh.
what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He fucked
but
me.
But if he is not the nominee, I don't think a lot of people come out and vote.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that's right. I think that's true.
I think our standing in the world would be severely compromised.
It already is because of how he is talking.
How is he not the Putin?
If you have a chance, you should really check out Majid Nawaz's stuff about how we need to win over the Muslim world, how we need to fight.
Is that the guy that got in with Sam Harris?
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing stuff.
Yeah.
They started an email back and forth. It's now turned into a book you can go read. Check it out. Find it. What's the guy's name?
Majid Nawaz.
Check it out. It
on,
is amazing.
He's on Twitter, too. Yeah, and he's written some great stuff for the Huffington Post, et cetera. And what we need to do is we need to diffuse these narratives, the Islamist, and we can talk about that word, narrative, that somehow there's this war against Muslims, which is just simply not true. But Trump actually plays right into that card.
Yeah,
sure.
Of course he does. Of course he does. I actually got a chance to go to Iraq a few years ago. I'm sorry if I talked about this before.
To do what?
To do comedy.
Wow.
And when I was there, it was incredibly enlightening to me. Not that we were out and about amongst civilians so much, but when you're flying over and you see how inhospitable the actual landscape is in a lot of parts of the Middle East, you have a more of an understanding of why their society was so cut and dry with the rules.
Yeah.
Because 100 years ago, if you stepped outside of those rules, because everything is so inhospitable.
Yeah. For those who don't understand, if you fly over, it looks like Palmdale.
Yeah, it's incredible. And you understand that if someone does walk outside of what the rules are, you are putting a large group of people at risk,
right,
in a sense, because it is so inhospitable. I mean, that being said, you know, then it's that kind of atmosphere on top of a kajillion dollars worth of oil. You know what I mean? And so
black gold.
It's an interesting thing. And I had I went with Carol Montgomery, a comedian, mm-hmm. and Mark Riccadonna and Steven Cruiser. He's a very Republican kind of pundit guy. And when we were there, we had flown to some forward operating base, and when we got there, they had taken over this elementary school that, and in the middle of the elementary school was an open space where the kids had played, but that's where we actually did the show. And at the time, the military would hire people, civilians, to work on the base, either cleaning, cutting hair, blah blah blah. But they, because no one really wanted to work for the Americans because you were ostracized, it tended to be people that were outside the social norm. So it tended to be gay men,
Mexicans,
and women that and women that were outside the social norm. And so we would do our acts, and my act is very filthy. And here I am as a woman doing my act to arguably the least educated and physically strongest of our nation, and I'm being appreciated by those people. And I remember doing my act, and there was a woman, an Iraqi woman, without her hijab or a scarf or whatever, and she was watching and laughing. And then when the show was over and I was talking with all the soldiers or whatever, we were trying to do our thing because it's all about, you know, hey, thanks for coming to the show and, you know, getting people's spirits up. She left and she had to cover herself. And I thought to myself, that is so crazy. Mm. In this small circle, I can say whatever I want, as I said, to the physically strongest and probably the least educated, where she can't even look a man in the eye.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Yeah. That's a great story. And I think we are not cognizant enough of the courage it takes. I just published a piece in Skeptic about costly signaling. And that story was really interesting to me because I don't think that we're aware enough of the courage that it takes. Everybody is crying for Muslims to scream out against the Islamic State or to scream out against extremism or what have you, or to make their voices known. That comes at a tremendous cost.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is not something to be taken lightly.
Yeah.
And that's why these reformers in the Muslim world really are the heroes. And these are people who are speaking out actively as opposed to just taking off their scarf.
Right.
I was listening the radio. It was a talk radio show, like NPR, and this young girl was...
We all presumed it was NPR when you said
it could have
talk
been a
radio.
Podcast. this young girl was talking about this project they had going where they were trying to help Muslim women who felt threatened change their look to look less threatening because they wanted to not live in fear of people harassing them, especially after the latest attacks. And so she was saying, yeah, so you can wear your scarf more in like a turban style and not wear it
like a
in
Sikh
Yes, and not wear it in a traditional style. And the reporter said, well, isn't that kind of, you know, not standing up for who you are kind of thing? She goes, but some people don't want to be seen as harmful, so they might change their look just a little bit. You know, yeah, with the stereotype.
That's really important. Can I say something I think is super important? So you have a large listenership, many of whom I assume are atheists.
Almost all.
Almost all. Okay, so rather than me say to you, well, look, don't be a dick, the famous Phil Plait speech at TAM, or do this, do that, this un-American, people should be able to live their own lives, that is not going to appeal to people. Let me tell you something in no uncertain terms. In addition to being an asshole, if you were to ever harass someone because of their religion or any garb they have or a beard or what have you, the problem with that is if you're doing that, I don't know why people would have that animus, that impetus to do that. Why would they have that animus? But if you're doing that, you're actually undermining what it is that you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Every single time you do that, you're alienating our own citizens. Yeah. You're making the problem worse. In fact, you are the problem.
Yeah.
So it's not a question of this is how I would frame this is kind of a street epistemology thing. It's not a question of what is the American thing to do or constitutional thing to do or don't be a dick or what have you. It's you're doing this is causing the opposite result of what you want. It's making you less safe. And the people we need the help. We need to undermine the narrative that there is a war against Muslims. It is simply not true. And every time somebody harasses or intimidates or gives a mean look to a woman in a headscarf, you have made the problem worse.
Right. Well, first of all, do you think that problem is coming from the atheist community?
No, I don't. No,
I don't either.
I don't. But I do think I hear stories like this, and then I hear stories like the one that you told, and, mm-hmm. and I think that there's a synthesis of those stories. I think that it's coming from, to be blunt, rednecks, yeah. incredibly ignorant people,
yeah.
people who think that they're trying to help, but they're making it worse, and also people who feel frustrated and they don't know how to discharge that frustration.
Right.
There are things that you can join the military if you really want to. There are things that you can do, but harassing innocent people is absolutely the worst thing you could. It's not yeah. even doing. It's contributing to the problem.
I think it's driven by fear and anger, and I guess
I think it's driven by laziness.
Laziness.
Yeah, I think if in this day and age, if you it is a combination of fear, mm-hmm. anger, and laziness. If you have fear and you can't fucking figure it out and you have a computer, it's laziness.
Oh,
if
right.
you have anger and you can't figure that. Out a way to dissipate your anger and you have a computer, it's laziness.
You don't have an excuse anymore for being uneducated about anything, really.
That's right.
That's a really great sentence. I love that. All right, you're listening to Ardent Atheist at ardentatheist.com and available at the iTunes Store. More after this intolerable intermission. And now, a special announcement.
This is a big super shout-out to a few of our listeners. Bunny Boy Ace. Hmm. Aussie Faggot Cunt.
What?
Trevor. Six Ball. I find Sean sexually attractive. Cinny.
Hi, Cinny.
Sean Cochran. Sorry.
That's Snap-a-crat. Just a normal name. That's
I
not
know.
Even a fucked up name.
It looks
name.
Like Cochrane. Snap-a-crat. Jonathan Parker. And Joe Swam. These were some of the people chatting on the Wall of Reason last week. Thanks for being there, everybody.
And now back to Ardent Atheist nonsense you can believe in. We're talking with Peter Boghossian and Felicia Michaels. Thank you so much for being here. Felicia, you just said something that I think is both absolutely accurate and profound. I've said for years that one of the things that's going to really... We will eventually look back on this, on these devices here, the iPhones, the iPads, the smartphones, the, I don't mean to be Apple exclusive, I just happen to be, the Androids, all of these devices that we can get information with, from rather, or through, at the blink of an eye, we will look back at this time as the Enlightenment. That's what I think is going to happen eventually.
I think so too. I think that's, it's such a great time right now. The problem is that some people aren't able to cull the information that they collect correctly.
Here's my opinion on this. I think that, first of all, you know, when I was growing up, you had a handful of sources of information.
Encyclopedia.
Encyclopedia was the main one.
Magazines.
And if I went to my mom and dad or my grandparents who raised me, and I said, it says here that the largest spider is the Goliath tarantula, they couldn't help me confirm whether that was true or not. It's in there. It's true. Does it say that? Then it's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So why do you... I guess I disagree. Why do you think it's an Enlightenment?
Let me finish this thought, and then I'll get to that. So I had simple sources of information that were considered to be and were espoused to be infallible pieces of information. And that's where you go to get that information if you need it, and which isn't true. Wasn't true at all. Wasn't true then. Because of that, I was not taught the basic tenets of critical thought. I wasn't taught to question whether the thing that they're saying about St. Peter in the encyclopedia was influenced by the Catholic Church in 1857. I wasn't taught to even ask those questions, right? Now, you can't not ask those questions because when you go to look for information, you find conflicting pieces of information instantly, and you have to parse it. I think it's less important at this point in time about whether or not people are parsing information accurately or not, but more important and most important and paramount and amazing that people are being confronted with multiple sources of information and differing information. Once you've got more than three doors in front of you, you know that two of those doors are wrong.
But you only have to parse it if you have the attitudinal disposition to parse it. Or most people would just be subject to confirmation bias and tools.
Find like, the thing that they believe
in. Yeah, tools like phones and Google and such, they just search for the things they already believe to increase the confidence value of the things they have, and then they throw those out in discussion.
I think that is a byproduct of how we were prior to this massive amount of information.
Well, I think the most depressing thought, and I kind of maybe feel this way, is not everybody is capable of critical thinking.
I totally disagree.
Are they starting?
You're thinking of someone specific,
school, right?
Aren't you?
No, I just feel like.
And she's married
this,
to your. Yeah.
No. I just think that that people are able to have critical thinking up to a certain point. It's like in show business with talent. If you get on TV regularly as a comedian, let's just use that as an example. There are some people that are wildly funny and some people that aren't as funny, but everyone's at least this funny.
Right.
Some people might be that funny.
Made it to television, they're at least at a certain level.
At a certain level. I think the average person is at a certain level. But I think in this day and age, there is so much information going on. There is so many ideas floating around about fucking everything that the average person might not be able to have critical thinking on all these different subjects.
You know, I have to practice critical thinking when I'm looking up the truth or the answer to a question, and I'm confronted with a ton of different answers saying different things. I tend to try my best to look for a scientific website or a website that's known to be correct about these things and not known to confirmation bias. And, you know, someone
and we remind each other to question the things that confirm what we already think.
Yes, and we make mistakes all the time, too. I'll post an article or something that is not true, and someone will point out to me, oh, this website is not a reliable source.
Yeah, I thought Ask the Pussy was safe. And I found three sites that showed it happening. Okay? So apparently it's not, though, just for the record.
If you
don't have to look it up.
If you want to know the truth and if you really want to know the truth, I think you'll find it if you look and learn about what the best sources are.
But
I am at one level.
Some people who aren't able to have critical thought get so dug in because they're not able to have critical thought. Even if you were to say, like, I posted a joke based on a bullshit website and then someone pointed it out, and I'm a person that's able to have critical thinking, so I'm like, oh my God, I got to research this a little bit more. You know, but some people, but it doesn't threaten me, doesn't hurt my feelings that someone said, hey, dumbass, that doesn't work. You know what I mean? But for other people, it's a threat.
That's interesting. Do you find that in comedy? Do you find that in comedy that you have to have a thick skin to do comedy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but weirdly, a lot of comedians have very thin-skinned personalities.
What you learn, I think, in comedy is how to pretend to have thick skin. That's really what I think you do. You figure out how to put up a really strong front.
That's really interesting. I just made a connection that I hadn't made before about professional atheism or atheism as we do it and professional comedians. And they really do need to be at least externally rigorous, if not internally rigorous. I mean, I guess I'm lucky in that I just don't care about a lot of stuff.
Right.
The thing is, you know, the differences, I think, between what you do and what we do is you write things.
Yeah.
You speak publicly and people will criticize your talent of writing, which comes out of you and you're proud of, you know.
Yeah.
We're making dick jokes over here and, you know, and we get criticized, we laugh it off because we don't care about that stuff. But, you know, when you're writing something from your heart or you're writing something that you feel is very, very important and then someone just, you know, fucks with you constantly about it.
I have people incessantly in fucking with me. I mean, just constantly. But the thing is that it only matters to me if I respect them.
Yeah.
If I don't respect them, And I don't know. Maybe that's where it becomes disanalogous to comedy. If you go up and you give a joke and...
It's very analogous,
I think,
actually.
It's all different how long you've been doing comedy. For some people, I have a pretty thick skin. And even if it's someone that I respect, I don't give a shit. You know what I mean? Because I'm just doing my own thing, you know? I understand where some people, of course...
Okay, so unpack that. You don't give a shit that they... Like, what if you were giving... I don't know who the best comedians are, but let's just say you were...
Jerry Seinfeld.
You're giving a performance...
Jerry Seinfeld? I'm just trying to think of a top name.
There are 10 comedians, and they said your routine sucked.
Right.
You would be bummed. Come on, right?
I would depend who those 10 comedians were.
This is hard for Felicia to imagine, and I'm not just blowing smoke, and I'm not trying to be nice to my guests.
People say I suck, trust me.
She was... When she was doing comedy on the circuit when I was a young comic... She was a superstar among all of us, and everybody thought that she was an amazing character, which is an important aspect of what you're doing. A through the roof performer. She had top marks in all of the points that you
reviews.
Have to hit.
Rave
Writing
reviews.
Was impeccable. Everything
so
that you did was amazing.
Now, as an older person, I mean, I'm not 100 or anything, but I'm older. But looking back in that time, it didn't feel like that. To me, it felt like I got a lot of judgment for my content of my material.
Well, you and I both suffered the slings and arrows of don't talk dirty. I mean, I was doing cunt jokes in my second year. And so I understand that. But your peers didn't feel negative about your work, I don't think.
Because they were mostly men at that time, felt very negative. A lot of them.
Well, I certainly don't want to diminish
your
struggle. Because
I have them now
that,
when I'm doing my writing. I have people that I've known for 30 years now say to me, God, who would have thought you? And I was like, well, fuck off, man.
That's so weird. I was a Kansas City comic. We paid attention to the touring nationals. And Felicia, you were absolutely loved by all the people that I knew.
That's very kind of you to say.
The comic world that I lived in just thought that you were amazing. And
that's very kind.
I don't remember, the comics that I hung out with, the people that I worked with, there was definitely gender bias issues in our world back then, you know?
Oh, yeah.
God, she just does nothing. But period jokes was a sentence you would hear all the time.
I never did a period joke.
And whatever. I'm not talking about you. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about women.
Yeah.
I'm going to go over a little bit here. That was one of the things that we would hear a lot and that I remember falling into. The same thing I fell into, fucking prop acts, Carrot Top sucks. No, he doesn't. He's fucking brilliant.
He's really great at
what
he does.
And always has been. And you fall into those patterns with folks, I suppose.
Yeah.
But you were so above all of those complaints for us.
Well, I wouldn't say above, just so different at the time because it was mostly men.
Yeah.
I think we need to be aware of that, so... What I think is important is that...
You know what's important for sure?
No. Well, actually, yeah, I think I do. I think I do know what's important.
I think you need to share that with us.
I think I do know what's important.
When we come back. Because, ladies and gentlemen...
must not be that important.
That's it for the free hour. This has been the free version of episode 184. Another show that went off without a hitch. We miss you, Hitch. What happened, Heather?
I was chatting with
someone. Don't you miss Hitch?
I miss him.
Are you besmirching Hitch?
I told you I don't feel good.
The show didn't go off without a hitch,
though. It didn't.
All right.
We did.
We'll be making the full 90 minutes available to our premium subscribers.
Very soon.
Very soon. I want to thank our guests, Peter Boghossian and Felicia Michaels. I also want to thank my co-host and producer, Heather Henderson, and our video switcher, Ryan Magnan. Tune in next week when our guests will be...
Lovers.
And we'll be talking about...
Fighters.
That's very nice. Where can people find you? You have a website, Twitter...
I'm at FeliciaMichaels.net.
FeliciaMichaels.net.
Felicia Michaels all across the board on Facebook and Twitter.
There you go. And where can people find Peter Boghossian?
Boghossian.com or at Twitter is best.
Yeah.
At Peter Boghossian, Boghossian.
There you go. I'm your host, Emery Emery.
And I'm Heather Henderson. Our theme music courtesy of the sound editor of The Aristocrats, Eric Wilson, and special thanks to our Wall of Reason moderator, Joseph Hipster Wannabe Swam.
Some characters mentioned on this podcast are completely fictitious. Any resemblance to real persons living or dead is purely wishful thinking. You've been listening to Art and Atheist. Art and Atheist is a product of natural selection.
Cunt.
Hey, did I say cunt for no reason? Oh, and ass to pussy, not good.